grab the phone and make a call, or at least pretend you're talking to someone. If that isn't possible, try this technique instead. Stay completely composed and repeat each of his gripes back to him almost verbatim. Preface it with statements like, "If I understand correctly, you're saying," then repeat the complaint, or, "I see you feel that," then rephrase the grievance using many of the same words. Just make sure you don't do it with super friendly body language that anyone could misinterpret as you're siding with him. For instance, if he's telling you, "The production department never gets the product out on time," you simply state, "Oh, you're telling me the production department doesn't get the product out on time." He continues, "It's not my fault. I always get the orders in long before the deadline." You paraphrase, "I see. You always get the orders in long before they need to be." He adds, "I don't know what the heck they're doing with them. They're probably just gathering dust on their desks." "Hmm," you say, "they may be gathering dust on their desks." Just repeating the griper's words won't give him the satisfaction he's looking for, so he'll soon give up and seek more responsive ears. The beauty of it is that you didn't rudely cut him off. After all, you were listening to him. Little trick number 64. The verbatim shutter-upper. If avoiding conversation with a complainer is impossible, just repeat what he says as though clarifying that you got it right. This will soon start to annoy the kvetch, and although he can't accuse you of being rude or ignoring him, it interrupts his rhythm, which takes all the fun out of it. He won't stay long. Another sneaky silencer. Here's another little trick for dealing with a griper. After his first few sentences, smile supportively and say, "Yes, I understand how bothersome that would be. Let's get this on paper." Then grab a pen or start a new document on your computer. At this point, you'll probably see a little "oops" expression on his face. Write what he's just said, then look back up as though you're waiting for more. After another sentence or two, interrupt him and say, "Hang on for a second. I want to get this right." And then start writing again. Now he gets really nervous and wonders why you're taking notes. Are you planning to tell the person he's talking about what he said? Or the boss? Or everybody in the office? If he asks why you're taking notes, say, "I just want to make sure I understand the situation clearly." He'll quickly wind down. Little trick number 65. Write their gripes. When you first start this technique, the bellyacher will think you're being supportive. But after a few moments, his paranoia will set in and he'll wonder what you're going to do with your notes. This will make him nervous, and he'll soon quit. Put them to sleep. If for some reason you're hesitant to use the verbatim shutter-upper or the write-their-gripes technique, here's a third, which I call bore the bellyacher. As the complainer drones on, respond with nothing more than a series of brief responses like, "Yes, I see. Okay." But do not say anything else. Do not agree with him. Do not tell her she's wrong. Do not offer your opinion. Do not suggest solutions. Even if your ideas are good, the sniveler will probably protest, "That's impossible. It's not realistic. You don't understand." Instead, as a last resort, give this little trick a shot. Little trick number 66. Bore the bellyacher. No matter how many suggestions you offer, dedicated disparagers will relish telling you why it won't work. When you respond with nothing more than a few monosyllabic words, troublesome types get bored listening to themselves and soon walk away on their own. These three little tricks will at least take you off the list of folks they'll complain to. As they leave your desk, you can take a deep breath and get back to work. Chapter 58. Gossiper's friend today is gossiper's victim tomorrow. Is your company considering pay cuts, reducing benefits, being sold? Is your boss having an affair? Talking about layoffs? Getting divorced? Is a colleague looking for another job? Hiding a prison record? Getting promoted? If you work for a large organization, you've heard speculations like these dozens of times. And no matter what size your company, you've run into gossip mongers with wagging tongues, loose lips, and helpless targets. These poor souls can't resist dishing the dirt on a colleague's illicit affair or the company's financial woes. They have such a need to spread it around, they wouldn't close their mouths in a sandstorm. Pity the poor blabbermouths, because in many studies, like Why People Gossip, an empirical analysis of social motives, antecedents, and consequences, find that gossipers crave attention and need to make themselves feel superior to other people. Unfortunately, companies now don't handle rumor mongers as effectively as the 17th century Brits did. Once someone was accused of gossip, the British strapped a muzzle, which looked like a horse's bridle but far more painful, over the storyteller's head. It had jagged edges that kept the gossiper's tongue fixed to the bottom of her mouth. Your company probably doesn't keep a stock of those in the storeroom. However, the following technique is a deterrent for someone who gossips, which is equally as painful for her emotionally. It won't rid her of her habit, but it immunizes you against the verbal vomit. The beauty of it is that it doesn't even alienate the blabber. Suppose a coworker tells you in a hushed voice, "Don has a drinking problem. Heather is leaving her husband." Frank said he hoped the manager would get fired. Paige gained at least 10 pounds. Jackson posted that he's looking for another job on social media. Karen and Kevin had sex after the last Christmas party. Ad nauseam. Some of my students have found this ruse helpful in such cases. Tell the storyteller that it's interesting, and you'll go ask the person being talked about. Little trick number 67. Let's go ask 'em. The next time colleagues start to share a tidbit with you, don't bite and act like you want to hear more. Simply smile and say something like, "Oh, really? Let's go ask him about it." The stunned gossiper will start stuttering, but then you smile and change the subject. The gossiper will get the point. Get gossip guts. It takes spunk not to bite when a juicy tidbit is being dangled in front of your teeth, especially if it's about someone you don't like. If you have the discipline to excuse yourself when you sense trash talk coming, everyone will respect you. Just cheerfully say you've got a lot of work to do and walk away. Another important reason not to socialize with gossipers? Guess who may be their next victim? The less these story spreaders know about you, the better. Chapter 59. How to Skillfully Squash Interrupters. Everyone hates getting interrupted. I do, even when I'm saying something pointless, which is pretty often. One particular colleague who constantly interrupted me comes to mind. I don't think his goal was to torture me. If it was, he'd let me finish making a fool of myself instead of cutting me off. After suffering his affront several times, I started watching how other interruptees handled the situation. Some glowered at the perpetrator with a venomous, "Excuse me, I was talking." One looked daggers at the interrupter, pointed to her own mouth, and said, "Hey, lips moving, still talking." I've heard other caustic comments like, "Sorry for talking while you were interrupting." Did I take a breath and give you the impression that I'd finished? Now, you have to wait for your turn like everybody else. If you don't mind, I haven't finished my point. These rejoinders were meant to squelch the interrupter, but it only triggered uncomfortable silences. So how should you respond when a colleague cuts you off mid-sentence in a meeting or one-on-one conversation? Here's what I suggest. Little trick number 68. Kill the interrupter with kindness. To make you look like a saint and the interrupter like a jerk, act like the interruption is not only okay, but that you welcome it. The split second he cuts you off, stop speaking mid-sentence and give the perpetrator an accepting expression. Then look down at your notes or at your laptop. When he's finished, look back up at him and say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I was distracted for a minute." "Of course you were distracted. He interrupted you." Then continue with, "Please, I'm anxious to hear what you have to say. What was it again?" Now the interrupter must repeat what he said, which makes his intrusion even more obvious. This works especially well in a meeting when he must repeat himself in front of everybody. Then here's the follow-up. Smile as though nothing had happened, and without rancor, state, "As I was saying," then finish your point. He'll feel like a heel. Chapter 60. How to Disagree Without Declaring War. I'm sure it's happened to you in a meeting or a discussion at work. As soon as you finish making your point, some obnoxious colleague jumps in with, "I disagree," or "You're wrong." That's like a slap in the face for no reason. Naturally, you wouldn't say that to your boss, but I can't tell you how many times I've heard employees spit these words out at each other, even in meetings. Some even respond starting with the word "no," which brings back images of Mom slapping your hand when you reached for the cookie jar. Now let's reverse the roles. Suppose you're in a meeting and a colleague says something that you know is the sticky brown substance that bulls excrete. How do you politely tell Big Mouth you totally disagree with him? And should you? Of course you should. And if it's an important issue, you must. But do it in a way that retains the coworker's goodwill and keeps everyone's respect. Simply preface your opinion with a few agreeable words and a long pause before articulating your conflicting views. Here are some examples. You make an interesting point. Long pause. Then continue with your view. That's very insightful. Long pause. Then continue with your opinion. I understand completely how you could see it that way. Long pause. Then continue with your sentiment. It's even better if you start your next sentence with yes. Yes, that's an intriguing way to look at it. Long pause. Then continue with your conviction. Yes, I can see you've given this a lot of thought. Long pause. Then continue with the way you look at the situation. In all your communicating at work, never forget the power of the pause. Comedians rehearse their timing endlessly because a brief moment of silence gives their audience time to reflect on what's been said before hearing the punchline. Likewise, give your colleagues an extra second to enjoy your complimentary response before hitting them with the less pleasant part they need to hear. Little trick number 69. Commend before countering. When you disagree with a colleague, first compliment him with an acknowledgement that his point is interesting, insightful, thoughtful, or any other praiseworthy adjective. Then pause long enough for him to relish the tribute, and only then express your contrary view. He may not even realize that you've just gainsaid him. Chapter 61. Before telling a coworker anything. Do you remember studying ancient Egypt in school? When a humble message runner delivered good news to the pharaoh, he was wined, dined, and treated like a prince. But if the poor messenger had the misfortune to bear bad tidings, the news was even worse for him. Off with his head. The following technique may be obvious to you, and if it is, congratulations. However, I've seen many employees disregard it, much to their detriment. So I want to share it with you. You never know how somebody's going to react to what you say. So before saying anything, think about how the listener might feel. For example, suppose the president of the company comes to you directly with a matter that usually goes through your boss. You're pretty proud of this, and with a big smile, you tell your boss about it. Suddenly, he turns gruff. "Get out of my office," he commands. Wait a minute. This was a feather in your cap, and he should be pleased. How unfair. You didn't do anything wrong, or did you? The problem could be the way you delivered the news. You've heard the saying, it's lonely at the top. That doesn't just mean leaders regret having less time to spend with friends or family. They are sometimes frustrated that people at work don't understand the intricacies of what's going on, so they have no one to confide in. If you say something to your boss or coworkers without thinking about how they might take it, they can get irritated at you for not understanding. So how should you have given your boss the news that the company owner came to you and not him? Certainly not the way three people gave me news in just one day last month. Arriving early in Seattle after a red-eye flight, I went to my hotel where the receptionist chirped, "Oh, your room's not ready yet." The heck with her smile. How about a little shared disappointment and sympathy? Hungry and tired, I dragged myself over to a 7-Eleven to get some cash from the ATM machine. After 5 minutes of fighting to make it cough up the money, the store owner waltzed over and merrily said, "Oh, that old machine. It's been out all week." "Why didn't you tell me earlier?" I wanted to shout. Couldn't he have shared my frustration? That evening, I went to my favorite Seattle restaurant, ravenous for its scrumptious signature dessert. I told the server how much I loved it, but with a shrug and a big smile, he chuckled, "Sorry, I just served the last piece." I fantasized hurling my fork at him for at least not pretending to share my disappointment. Why did I react so badly to these situations? Was it the problems? Of course not. Hotel rooms often aren't ready for early check-in, ATM machines go on the blink, and restaurants run out of popular desserts. What infuriated me was the way these people told me. Didn't they know I'd be upset? And couldn't they at least pretend to share my sentiment? Back to your boss. He could take the company president coming directly to you as a slight to him, so acting proud and happy about it, which you deserve to be, would not be appropriate. Before imparting any news to anyone at work, first ask yourself how the listener might react. Little trick number 70. Tell it like they'll take it. You've always heard, tell it like it is. Of course, that's good advice when it comes to the truth. But here's an emotional lens you should superimpose before making a point. Always ask yourself, how are they going to receive this news? Will it affect them personally? What complications, confusions, or implications could come to their minds? Everything that happens at work affects everyone differently, so hear your words through their ears and deliver your message accordingly. Chapter 62. Don't bite the hand that signs your paycheck. Now let's deal with the number one national workplace pastime. It's fun. It releases tension. It creates camaraderie. Unfortunately, it's also the reason a lot of folks don't get as far as their abilities entitle them to be. So what is this transgression, this violation, this really screw-up-your-chances-on-the-job wrongdoing? Quite simply, it's griping about your boss. But everybody does it, you might say. Yes, but chances are those everybodies aren't close to the top of the totem pole. When you vent, even if your colleagues agree with you, their estimation of you goes down. Whenever the dealing with your boss segment comes up in my seminars, I see students clench their fists, rub their necks, and cross their arms across their chests. It doesn't take a psychologist to know that these poor folks are in pain. I see sweat on their palms as they wave their hands, dying to tell everyone about their abominable bosses, especially in my public seminars. Their usual grumbling goes something like this. One employee says, "I sent mine 3 emails yesterday. Nothing. She never responds." Another moans, "I don't think my boss even reads them." "You guys are lucky," whines a third. "My boss hangs over my shoulder every minute of the day. Talk about a micromanager." And in every class, I hear things like, "It takes forever for my boss to sign off on projects. Mine is a spineless wimp because he won't stand up for our department even when he knows it's not our fault. And I have proof I'm underpaid, but my boss closes his ears, saying it's total BS. My training sessions sometimes turn into a contest of who has the worst boss. But there are no winners here. Only losers. The ones who complained to their colleagues about their bosses and got caught. An accounting clerk in one of my classes told the group, "My friend Michelle and I went to the movies one Saturday night a couple of months ago. There was a long line for tickets, so we started just shooting the breeze, talking about our jobs. I was telling her I hated my boss because she's such a bitch. She never stops nitpicking and criticizing me. Suddenly, I heard a big laugh behind me. I whirled around, and oh my God, it was the president of the company with his wife. So you think she's the B-word, do you?" he chuckled. I turned beet red and apologized. But it was okay because he just laughed, and then we made some friendly small talk. But first thing on Monday, my boss called me into her office. She was totally irritated and chewed me out for referring to her as a bitch. She said how humiliating it was to hear this from the president, and accused me of being two-faced and unprofessional. After that, she started treating me worse and worse. I knew that no matter how hard I worked, she'd never forgive me. So I started looking for another job. That encouraged other students to spill their sad tales of the consequences when they had griped about their bosses. A few were transferred to departments they hated. Some were labeled troublemakers and never earned back the trust of their bosses. Many were berated and felt sure it ruined their chances for future promotion. Some lost a lot more, their jobs, and a good recommendation. So what's the solution? This one is super simple. Little trick number 71. Never bitch about your boss, ever. I know that's like telling you not to breathe, right? But beefing about the boss is a big no-no. Instead, go home, punch the pillow, kick your cat. No, please don't do that. Breathe deeply and take a long walk. But never complain about your boss to a colleague, or even to anyone who knows someone at your company. In fact, I suggest not even griping to any of your personal friends about your boss, because it demeans you and makes you sound like you're not in control of your own professional life. Need I even mention the dangers of griping about your boss or company on social media? Read some of the online tales told by boss complainers. Most of them are now ex-employees of the company where they worked. As the workplace evolves, some relief is in sight concerning bosses. Although there will always be companies and family businesses where everyone knows who calls the shots, the corporate world is moving toward a more collaborative atmosphere. The workplace, which is changing at the speed of light, is being influenced by a more socially conscious and socially responsible generation that understands that big data and the Internet of Things connect everybody and everything. Most of the transformations are spectacular, while some are scary. Before we close, let's take a quick peek into what's right around the corner for you at work. Part 6. Conclusion. Chapter 63. The Office of Tomorrow. Do you remember the story of my dad's office, where I spent my snow days as a kid? The one where secretaries took letters for their mostly male bosses and marveled at the newfangled fax machine? If you were teleported back for a visit, you'd still recognize it as an office, but if you journeyed in the other direction, you might not. Let's say you work in the office of tomorrow. When you arrive, if you're not working from home that day, which you often do, a camera verifies your facial features, the doors open, the AI, artificial intelligence receptionist, wishes you a good morning by name, and your presence is detectable on everyone's device. You walk to your workstation in a spacious room where others, including your boss, are busy on their laptops or other devices. It's a pleasant, more collaborative atmosphere, and perhaps includes a coffee bar with stools and a few snacks. If you jump ahead a few more years, You'll be adjusting your augmented reality, AR, glasses to bring up a monitor showing the new messages that your AI personal assistant has determined merit the best use of your time that morning. If you like, you can also add an AR-framed photo of your family, or even a fish tank with a great white shark swimming in it. You go through your messages quickly because your AI assistant has rewritten the subject lines, giving you the meat of each message before you open it. Additionally, all the information you need to reply to the message is already pulled up. If you're old school, you'll want to thank your assistant, but then remember it's not necessary because he's virtual. Or she. You can give your AI assistant any gender you like. Now you're preparing for a video meeting with your manager to review a project proposal. Your AI assistant has chosen a time convenient for both of you, depending on your time zones and personal preferences. All pertinent emails, documents, chats, and texts are always prepared for you. Your assistant also made graphs look better, corrected formatting, checked the weather at both venues, and suggested what you should say to that particular manager on that specific day to be most effective. If you get a bit drowsy after lunch, no problem. In fact, naps are encouraged for maximum efficiency. So you book a sleeping pod with twinkling stars and gentle music to awaken you after 20 minutes. Now that you're raring to go again, your AI assistant tells you how to best spend your afternoon. It all looks good, but in the history of the world, there has never been progress without problems. Many workers will get stressed out, knowing their managers are using big data as a performance metric, and you'll be concerned about accidents on the way to work in driverless cars. Instead of old-fashioned carpal tunnel syndrome from typing, you'll suffer simulator sickness in virtual reality. That's the conflict between what your brain and body think they're doing in virtual reality, sort of like the brain-body connection in Chapter 52. Your mind says, we're moving, and your body says, no, we're not. The discombobulation results in nausea. But forget the minutiae for now. You'll see all this soon enough. It's nothing to worry about, because overall, in the office of tomorrow, you will be more productive thanks to technology, and you will enjoy an open environment that encourages collaboration with your coworkers. And this book will still be relevant, because despite whatever difficulties or opportunities lie ahead, one thing will never change. Except for robots who help you with repetitive, boring tasks, everyone you work with is a thinking, feeling human being. Now you have the tools to help you reach the top at work. When you have shown that you are a confident individual, part one, who cares about everyone you work with, part two, and whose communication is crystal clear, part three, and totally credible, part four, and when you have proved that you handle bosses and coworkers with excellence online and off, part five, nothing should hold you back. As long as you understand the astonishing animals you work with called human beings. Chapter 64. Understanding the Human Animal. Have you heard of horse whisperers? They are a special type of trainers who have rare insight into the needs and behavior of horses. Unlike the old-fashioned horse trainers, horse whisperers guide the animal with patience and have a profound grasp of equine psychology. With this in-depth knowledge, they gently elicit the horse's cooperation and respect using methods the animal innately understands. In a way, a horse whisperer is a mind reader who knows how a horse he works with feels. Are its ears pulled backward? Nostrils flared, tail swishing, hind leg lifted? The horse whisperer knows those signals mean watch out. Horseback riders with shattered kneecaps obviously miss them. The animals at your company are human beings, but the skill set you need is the same. You must watch them carefully, learn to discern the signals each gives off, and try to prevent problems before they start. For many years, I took riding lessons at a stable where a horse whisperer works. Once, when Taylor and I were talking, He asked about my job. I told him I did coaching and gave seminars to help people communicate more effectively to express their ideas. I remember joking with him that he was lucky that horses couldn't lie and fake their feelings the way people do. Taylor thought about that for a while, and then, while saddling a horse for me, he said, "But people can fake their expressions only to a point. If I want to know how someone really feels, I watch them when they're not talking to me." I felt that Taylor was on to something, so I asked him to continue. "What do you mean?" "Well," he said, "when people think you're not looking, you get the real story. It's sort of like my job. I watch horses, but they don't act differently just because I'm looking at them." He then turned to me with a wink, saying, "If you want to figure someone out, I guess you should become a people whisperer." His analogy stunned me with its simplicity and truth. Lips can lie while speaking, but faces and bodies tell the truth when they think no one is looking. Science pays serious attention to those split-second fleeting expressions that slip across human faces thousands of times each day, called micro-expressions. By connecting them to brain activity with extraordinary precision, neuroscientists have discovered that it is, in a sense, possible to read people's minds, especially if you pay close attention to them when they don't think they're being observed. I once asked Taylor why people call his profession horse whisperer. Teasing him, I said, "I've never seen you whisper to any of the horses." He explained that the term came about because, to people who had no understanding of how horses communicate, it looked as though certain trainers were able to walk up to a wild horse, whisper some secret message, and gain its respect and cooperation as if by magic. Wouldn't it be great if you could do that with the people you work with? Gain everyone's respect and cooperation as if by magic? In a way, you can, by becoming what I call a people whisperer. First, let me share more of Taylor's wisdom about horses, and you'll see how it operates with the animals you work with. He continued, "There's nothing magic about it. It's just knowing their animal instincts and understanding why horses react the way they do. You watch how they relate to each other in a herd, and you must catch the signals early if you want to ward off problems. Through practice, you learn how to project yourself so the horse respects and cooperates with you. The first rule is you cannot force horses to do anything. You must get them to agree to go with the program. If at some point it breaks down, you must figure out what went wrong, why, and how to fix it. Horses will tell you everything you need to know, but you must keep a watchful eye on them. You need to be calm and reassuring when dealing with a horse. It never includes shouting or hitting, because if you lose your temper, all you've done is terrify the horse, who will react like any afflicted animal and fight back or take flight." The words in this final little trick are not mine. They are Taylor's words verbatim. All I've done is substitute the word coworker whenever he said horse. You can substitute the word boss if you like, but coworker signifies both. Little trick number 72. Be a people whisperer. There's nothing magic about it. It's just knowing their animal instincts and understanding why coworkers react the way they do. You watch how they relate to each other in a herd, and you must catch the signals early if you want to ward off problems. Through practice, you learn how to project yourself so the coworker respects and cooperates with you. The first rule is you cannot force coworkers to do anything. You must get them to agree to go with the program. If at some point it breaks down, you must figure out what went wrong, why, and how to fix it. Coworkers will tell you everything you need to know, but you must keep a watchful eye on them. You need to be calm and reassuring when dealing with a coworker. It never includes shouting or hitting, because if you lose your temper, all you've done is terrify the coworker, who will react like any afflicted animal and fight back or take flight. The key to succeeding with people is understanding the nature of the animals you work with and how they react to everything you say and do. But just reading these 72 little tricks won't make you a better communicator on the job. Practicing them until they become second nature will. Soon you'll never again need to ask yourself, how shall I handle this situation at work? Because doing it the right way will be automatic. It's for the same reason I wrote in How to Talk to Anyone. Repeating an action makes it a habit. Your habits create your character. And your character is your destiny. May success be your destiny at work.
I deeply hope this book helps you in your journey through the working world. If you have any questions, suggestions, or comments, I'd love to hear from you. Write to me at leal@coolcommunicating.com, and I'll get back to you as quickly as I can. You can also sign up for my free monthly tip called Little Tricks for Big Success in Relationships on my website, www.lounds.com. That's www.lounds.com. It's a short, once-a-month tip for better communicating in business, friendship, and love. I wish you all good things in both your professional and personal lives.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of How to Talk to Anyone at Work, 72 Little Tricks for Big Success in Business Relationships, by Leal Lounds, performed by Joyce Bean and the author, engineered by Stephen Jacoby. Performance copyright 2018 by Brilliance Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.